By way of introduction to the Mishnah of Tipas Cholov here on Daf Kuf Chesam and Aleph, the Rishonim, Tosis and Avodah Zorah, the Rashba in Shut, the Ritva in Psachim, the Rosh in Klai Akerem, Hilchas Klai Begadim, which is published at the end of Masechet Nida. All the Rishonim say that Basa B'Cholov, where each element is mutar, is heter b'fnei atzmo, the Basa is heter and the Cholov is heter, doesn't lend itself to the din of Bittul. In other words, Bittul only applies when you have Iser and heter, and the heter is coming to be mevatel the Iser. There's a certain conflict. But in a case where there's no conflict in Issa v'Heter, meaning both elements in the equation, the Basar and the Cholov are Heter, there's no Bittul. Rashi says this in Masechet Tmura with regard to Kelayim. You have Tzemru Fishtim, each one is Heter, there's no Din of Bittul. So what you have here is a mixture of Tzemer and Pishtan in the same Begad. We cannot calculate Rov versus Miut and apply the principle of Bittul, it's Heter v'Heter. We're going to see in our Mishnah of Tipas Cholov that the Cholov is Botel if it's not no same Tam. So if the ratio between the Cholov and the basar is, let's say, 1 to 61, the chalav is not no same tam, it's batel. Now, why would that be so? We just finished saying that all these Rishonim agree unanimously that there's no bittel in heter v'heter. So how could the chalav be batel in the basar? And the answer seems to be that we have to activate the principle which Rav is going to formulate here in our sugya called Derech Bishal Asra Torah. That the reason why the Tipas Cholov, in a case where it's not no same tam, does not generate an Iser Basar B'Cholov, is not because, not through the mechanism of Bittul can't work yet, it's Heter V'Heter, but rather because this is not Derech Bishal. When you cook something adding an ingredient into the mixture for the purpose of giving tam. If it doesn't give any tam, that's not normally what you do to add something into the cooking, into the pot, and it doesn't give any tam. So that's not the way you cook. It's not the normal way of bishul. And derech bishul asra Torah. The question is going to be Abaye, because as we'll soon see, Abaye does not offer that interpretation of Rava formulating the principle of Derech Bishul Asra Torah. You get the impression that Abaye doesn't hold from Derech Bishul Asra Torah. And that's what the Achronim point out here. What then is the reason for the heter in our Mishnah if it's not no same tam, if not bittul, because Abaye is not operating with the principle of Derech Bishul Asra Torah? And it could be that Abaye is only a havamina, and lamaskona he was moded to Rava and he accepted the principle of Derech Bishul Asra Torah, and he was matir. Anything that's not Derech Bishul is mutar. His machlokas with Rava, ha'im zeu gam tam ha'im lesar. In other words, let's take it the other way around. In a case where there's no bittul, there is nesinas tam, would the reason be that it's also because this is called derech bishul? In any event, let's mention a tshuva of Rabbi Kiva Eger. He wants to know, according to the Rishonim that we mentioned, are you allowed to take Cholov and deliberately mix it with Cholov in a way that you know it'll be Batel? Normally we have a principle of Ein Mevatel Nisa L'Chatchila. But here we're not talking about bittul. There is no bittul according to all these Rishonim. There's no Iser at all, basically. Bittul means you have Iser in the mixture, but you mevatel it. And you're not allowed to do that l'chatchila b'yadayim. But here, it's not that you have Iser and you mevatel. There is no Iser. This is not called derech bishul. Now, Rabbi Kivega has another possibility, the flip side. He says, no, maybe lo plug Rabbanan. Rabbanan, once they enacted, they formulated the Iser of Eimavat and Iser L'chatchila, they can apply it whenever it looks like being Mevatel Iser L'chatchila. Even though, in the case of Bas B'chalav, there is no Bittul, and it's a different reason why it's Mut, because of Derech Bishul Asrato, but nevertheless, lo plug Rabbanan. It's Michsei Kimavatel Iser. It looks like he's being Mevatel Iser because he's taking the Cholav and he's adding it to the Basar. And Rabbi Kivegan the Tshuva quotes a Ramah in Siman Tzadi Tes and a Shach in Siman Tzadi Beis in order to substantiate his second side that the principle of Ein Mevat L'Nisa L'Chatchila would apply to Basar B'Cholav, and that would have to be through the mechanics of Lo Plug. There are other Achronim who also prove from the Shach in Siman Tzadi Beis that Ein Mevat L'Nisa L'Chatchila applies to Basar B'Cholav. Now, in essence, we could prove that Ein Mevat L'Nisa L'Chatchila applies to Basar B'Cholav from Tosfos Dima Maskal Efshar, which we'll get to a little bit later on. It's the bottom Tosfos when he says B'dieved. But it could be that in the case of Tosfos, once the Chatichas Basar was already Nesra, therefore it makes more sense to say we're not going to be Matir that Yisur once it's Chal, through Bittul. Now, the Yishus Yaakov wants to prove from here that according to one Mandiyoma, which is called Efshal Sochto Mutter, that if he went ahead and he was Mevatel of our Ubitel, then we're not going to apply the principle of Gazrin and Shogeg Otu Mezin, since we're not operating him, he did Bittul. He has a doubt. Maybe even the Rabbanon, even Min Rabbanon, there's no Iser. Now the Mishnah says, Tipas Cholav Shenofla Alachaticha Im Yeshba Ben Osein Tam Osor. And it's going to be here a machlokes in the Mefarshim. Why is it that the Tipas Cholav, when it falls on this Chaticha, it spreads throughout the chaticha? That's called mefafas b'chol chaticha. Pipua means to spread out. Even though the chaticha, according to most Rishonim, is outside the rotev, why do we apply the principle of mefafas, that the tipas cholav would asa the entire chaticha? Usually, mefapas applies when there's some sort of mixture with liquid in it. Here, we're talking about a piece of meat that's outside the liquid, it's above the rotev. Again, that's going to be a major discussion, but we're not ready for that. And why then, in the absence of rotev, would the tipas chol be mefapas b'chol achaticha? And in a classic case of something that has no liquid, we call it tzliya, roasting. The principle is that it's not mefafas. That's a Gemara way back on Daf Tzadi Zion. And in a case of tzli, we apply the principle of kdei klipa, but we don't apply the principle of mefafas bekula, because it doesn't have that bishul element, that liquid element. And here, you have a hot piece of meat that's above the rotev. Where's the bishul over here? Where's the liquid to say that the tipas cholav is mefafas b'chol achaticha? And there are a number of different answers offered by the Mefarshim for this question. Some will argue that it has to do with the nature of Cholov. There's something unique about Cholov, that Cholov itself is Mefafea B'Cholach Haticha, even though in Tzli in general we don't apply this concept of pipua, but here in Cholov we do say it's mefafeh bekulo. And that's because of a certain property that Cholov has. Others want to say that since this chaticha is in the pot and all the heat of the cooking, with the liquids, of course, the rotev, are the we call it the hevel is ola, is coming up from the pot and, so to speak, surrounding everything that's in the pot, including that piece of meat above the rotev. And because that heat, and that heat is a liquid heat, because again, there's rotev in the pot, that causes the Isur to be mispashit. So Bubi Netta will go over these various explanations one by one, but I just want to give you the overview. Now, it could be, and this is going to be another approach to this whole sugya, is that the Cholov is mefafeh, not because of the quality, the propensity of the Cholov, but rather of the Basar. That Basar is a Dover Shomim. Basar is unique, and therefore something that falls onto Basar, in this case Cholov, will be mefafeh b'chola Basar. Another possibility is that there is liquid inside the chaticha itself. It's not really just a solid piece of dry meat, even though I grant you that it's above the rotev level. Or there's another possibility that the basar is what's called yesh bo bekayim. It has cracks and crevices in it, and that's why the cholov could enter into these cracks and crevices and spread throughout the chaticha. Of a slight variation of that approach would be that it's a dover mitubal, that it's already got tavlin on it, and the spices serve as a catalyst to cause the spreading of the cholov throughout the piece of meat. Again, all of this sounds very technical, mechanical, physical, biological. I don't know. It's hard to see, you know, the forest from the trees here and begin to weave together some sort of conceptual structure around all these shitos. Now, what about a case where it wasn't tipas cholov that fell on the chatich, but rather it was gvina, which is solid, it's not liquid, a piece of hard cheese? Or, for example, there's something called Nisyome de Chalva, or Mechalav, and it doesn't have any sort of thickness to it. It's not fatty, it's very thin and watery. So again, this would depend upon all the various shitas that we said about why it's Mefafea. You know, if it's because of the special quality of Chalav, that wouldn't apply to Mechalav, it wouldn't apply to Gvina. And therefore, in the case of Gvino, we would assume that the cheese fell on the meat and it just penetrates into the very surface layer of the meat, but doesn't penetrate throughout the piece of meat. Now, the Rishonim have a principle, which we've mentioned in the past, called Ein Balua Yotze Mechaticha L'chaticha B'lo Rotev. That means that from one chaticha to another chaticha, even if there's a negia between the two chatichos, the tam will not be absorbed. There won't be a tam balua absorbed by the other chaticha. However, that's only from one chaticha to a second chaticha, but within the same chaticha, it will be yotze, meaning it'll go from one part of the chaticha to the other and penetrate throughout the entire chaticha. Now, what would happen if the top piece which received the tipas kolov was not a chatichas basar? What if it was an etzem? So you have an etzem, a bone, that's laying on the top of this, of the contents of this pot. Again, this cooking of meat in the pot, but the top piece on which accept to receive the kolov is an etzem. And this becomes very relevant if, let's say, there's no shishim against the etzem. Does the etzem also receive this tipas kolov, and the tipas kolov, you know, circulates, it penetrates throughout the etzem, and it's similar to any chatichas basar? Or do we say no? Etzem is something different. It's not a conduit to transmit the tipas cholov, again without rotev, throughout this etzem. So that's going to be a question in the Rashba, in the Ramah, in Kufhei, as to the status of etzem, whether it has the same status as chatichas basar. Now, the balance of this mishnah talks about near esakadera, and then we get into issues that have to do with being mishayir b'shishim, whether you could use all the contents of the pot to be mevatel the tipas cholov, or do you have to have a shishim in the chaticha that received the tipas cholov against the tipas cholov. That's going to be this whole mishnah about near. So we're about to start the mishnah of tipas cholov, meaning to read it inside and try to analyze it at least as an introductory level. This is a very complex mishnah, and maybe we'll get a chance to look into some of the notes here in the Tosefta. That would be my goal. And the first footnote here in the Masifta addresses the question of Nafla, Tipas Cholov Shen Nafla. Why does the Mishnah give you that scenario? So B'li Neder, we'll try to get to that very soon.
Oh, we're still on the Mishnah.
We're starting the Mishnah. I haven't actually started the Mishnah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Tipas cholov shenofla ala chaticha, and the Mishnah establishes that if this a drop of milk falls on a piece of meat, is this possible cholov or is it not? It depends. Im yeshba beno sein tam biosa chaticha osur. If the ratio, so to speak, between the milk and the meat, let's say it's a small piece of meat and it's a large drop, I don't know, is such that it would have the power to give tam, and we're going to soon see that there are two ways of determining that. The easiest way, but it's only if it's available, is to give it to a non-Jew to taste. If this non-Jew is what's called a kfela, he's a chef. Again, we'll go into detail about that another time. We're not ready for that. And the other way is what's called to be mishayir b'shishim, meaning if the ratio between the cholov and the basar is 1 to 61, then there is no nesinas tam. The cholov is so relatively small in comparison to the basar that it doesn't really impact on the basar. You eat the basar and there's no tam. If, on the other hand, it's 1 to 60, then it would give tam, and the entire chaticha is asur.
Oh wait, 1 to 60 is asur.
Right. It has to be 1 to 60 plus. I said 61, but you know, whatever that mashu is beyond 60.
The one drop plus 60 pieces of meat is 61 and then 1 to 61? Or is
right.
It, or is it, and then so 1 to 60 would be 1 plus 59 times?
Right, for sure, 1 to 59, and if it's well, 1 to 60, that's going to be another sugya, which I don't know if we'll get to here.
But is the 60, when you talk about the 60, is that the 60, the meat is 60 times, or is it 60
right.
including the drop of milk?
Right, right. So that's an issue. But let's give the simple okay. case would be, let's say you have 59 plus 1 is 60, and that would be Nesinas Tam. And now there are a number of questions I want to raise here in the Mishnah, and then Eric will address your question. Just why does the Mishnah say Tibas Cholv Shenofla? Why isn't the Mishnah talk about a case where he actually cooked the milk deliberately with the basar? Meaning it sounds like a situation happened almost as if milk spilled onto the meat. And the Rishonim want to suggest the following, that the subject of our Mishnah is not Bishul, although obviously Bishul is one of the most critical elements in the Chiyuv for Basar B'Cholov. It's one of the three primary Isurim of Basar B'Cholov, and they're all Doraisa. But nevertheless, that's not the subject of our Mishnah. The Mishnah wants to emphasize that regardless of whether there was an act of Bishul and some sort of violation of Lo Sevashel, if the reality is that there's enough milk mixed into the meat that it gives tam to the meat, that's enough to create basar b'cholov. The Mishnah went out of its way, therefore, to use the term nafla in order to emphasize or illustrate that we're talking about below kavana. There was no active, deliberate element here of bishul. And we can add a little bit even more to that and say that the reason why the Mishnah doesn't even mention that there was a kezias of cholov. Now, the reason why I emphasize that, the kezias of cholov, is because of the sheet of Rav, which is on the next Amud, that's Kuf Ches Amud Beis. Rav holds that basar b'cholov requires a kezias of both cholov and basar. Tipas cholov implies that it's not a kezias. Is our Mishnah against Rav. Levi, on the other hand, holds that as long as the sach hakol, meaning after you add the milk, which is less than a kezias, to the basar, which is more than a kezias, the total combination is a kezias, that's enough for basar b'cholov. So that our Mishnah would seem to reflect the sheet of Levi. What's Rav going to say about our Mishnah? Meaning, according to Levi, it works out well. If the cholov is no Saint Tam in the basar, and the sach hakol, the total of this small amount of milk and this piece of meat is a kezias, so let's say, for example, the meat itself was a kezias, and the cholov in its ratio is let's say 1 to 59 to the basar, right? So there's a tipas cholov, which is 1 to 59 of this kezias. So Levi works out beautifully here, because Levi says this basar cholov, even if you don't have a kezias in the cholov, and you don't have a kezias in the basar, but the combination thereof is a kezias. What's Rav going to do with this Mishnah? So the Mefarshim answer, and I have a long footnote about this here in the Masifta, that the Mishnah went out of its way to teach us, based on Rav, that even though midoraisa, you only violate the Iser if you have a kezias basar and a kezias cholov, that's Rav Shita, but on a drabbanan level, it's enough that you have a combination of basar b'cholov. And the whole issue about shiurim is really not relevant on a Darabana level, it's only relevant on a Doraisa level. Again, let's just repeat two points. Point number one is that Mishnah went out of its way to say Nafla, which means that we're not talking about a violation of Bishul, that's irrelevant to have discussion. We want to know, do we have, if we can call it a Cheftza Basar B'Cholov, that's Asur. And number two, it's very possible that even in the worst case scenario, which is called the Yeshba B'no Saint Tam, we're only talking about an Issur D'Rabbanan. And maybe the Mishnah went out of its way to tell me that even though there's not a Kezias of Cholov here, nevertheless it's still Asur, even though there's only a Tipa, but since the ratio is, let's say, 1 to 60 or 1 to 59 in your case, Eric, therefore it's Asur. I'll call upon him, albeit D'Rabbanan.
I thought there was a rule.
Wait, just one second, Chaim, because Eric was burning before, and I pushed
sorry,
the rule.
No, I've got a few questions on this.
Well, let's go one at a time, because again, we haven't even gone through the Mishnah yet. Yeah, right. This is so introductory. You know,
the first question is: it's a piece of meat. So, what if the drop goes on one side of the piece of meat? Could you just cut that piece off that has the drop on it?
Right. So that's the principle called mefafea. which again, if I had a whiteboard here, I'd write it on the whiteboard. Mefafeh is mem pei ayin pei ayin. Mefafeh means that, and again, all of Hilchus Taromus is built on this concept of mefafeh, trying to figure out when it operates and when it doesn't. Mefafeh means that we assume, under certain conditions and certain regulations, that the taste is mefafeh. It spreads throughout. It doesn't stop. It has a life of its own.
Even though it may have just hit instantly and just on one end of a big piece of
right.
meat, you gotta.
Right. So again, normally we don't say mefafeh, but there are many, many situations in which we say mefafeh. For example, mefafeh applies when you have what's called a dover shomen. Shomen means very fatty. Liquids, usually we say, are not mefafeh. The only exception to that rule, the only liquid that is mefafeh, is called chalav. Why? Because chalav has a certain fatty element. There's another thing which is called mei chalav. Mei chalav is not the milk itself. It's like the whey. It's very liquidy. And if it's very thin, it's almost water. In such a case, it might have a din of chalav, but it's not chalav shamein. And therefore, it's not mefafeh. So then you could cut off, you know, the top part of the chatich. But again, the underlying principle of that mission is called mefafeh, if you can remember that, because that's critical.
And if it were a piece of cheese, then where it touches it, then there, you don't have to.
Now, in the case of cheese, which is pure solid, let's say it's a solid piece of cheese, then we have what's called kidei klipa. Kidei klipa means that there's only a surface level of pipua. It's not mefafea. It's only the tam only penetrates the top surface layer, which is called kidei etzba. Again, how much an etzba is, I don't know. But let's say, you know, it's just a layer that you just skim off on the top.
Even if it's hot.
Right, even if it's hot. Because we have a principle. Again, I can't give you the entire taros, you know, on one shot. But there's a principle called ein Blia yotzeis michaticha lechaticha below rotev, which means that if you put two solid substances, even if they're both boiling hot next to each other, benegia, then if there's no liquid whatsoever and it's pure solid, then there's no transfer of tam except for kedei klipa, just that surface level. So, for example, in our Mishnah, the Mishnah goes out of its way to point out that we're talking about cholav and not gvina. Because if it would have been gvina, then even if it's no saint tam, the nesinus tam would only be on the surface level. It doesn't penetrate, and it's not mefafeh, because that's the principle of ein bliya yotzeis michatich below rotem. In the case of cholav, though, which is a liquid could penetrate throughout if it's shamen, if it has a certain quality of fattiness to it. Now, some want to say that, forget about cholov. The reason why there's pipua here now is because of basar. That basar is shamen. The meat itself is considered something fatty. Now again, all these terms sound very mechanical, and biological, and physical, but you know, the real challenge of learning Taromas is to make it into something conceptual. But just on a very mechanical level, there's something called a Dover Shomein. We're not sure in our Mishnah what element in the equation makes it into a Dover Shomein so that there's Mefafeh, there's Pipua. It's either the Cholav that's called Shomein or the Basar that's called Shomein. In a case of Gvina, since it's totally solid and it's not liquid, there would only be a surface level. The Mishnah therefore went out of its way to choose the case of Tipas Cholav.
And one final thing on that, it says it fell on the piece of meat. So
right.
If you put in purposely a drop of milk into, you know, let's say even one in a million, would it be forbidden? Like, is there a limit to if you do purposely?
So now you're asking the following question. I'm just going to reformulate it in terms of the technical language. We have a principle called Ein Mevatlin Isur Lechatchila. The question is, if you violate that Isur, which I'll explain, is it, you know, you have to throw it out. B'dievet. This is. So that means the following. You're not allowed to deliberately calculate that there's such a minimum amount of Isur that I'm going to pour it into my pot, knowing that because of the heter is such a large volume, I'm going to create what's called bitul. I'm not allowed to do that. The question is, if I did it, you know, post facto, if I poured, you know, I poured nevela into basar heter, what's the deal with the taromas? Is it osa b'dievet? Let's assume that ein mevatlin isur lechatchila is only lechatchila, but b'dievet we will apply bitul. Well, shalom aleichem. Baruch L'chaim is.
Regarding the Shita that our Mishnah is only talking about Yisur de Rabbanan.
Right.
I thought we had a rule, Chetzi Shira Asur Min HaTorah. So why would you say that this is only
right.
the Rabbanan?
The Chetzi Shir only applies when you start with a piece of Nevelah. So if I cut the Nevelah, which is a Kezais, into half, and all I'm left with is a half a Kezais, since I started with Nevelah, I could continue the Isa Nevelah, even though I only have a half a Shir. But in the case of Basa B'Cholav, I need a Shir in order to create Basa B'Cholav. That means I need a Kezais of Basa, according to Rab, plus a Kezais of Cholav. Here I never had a kezayis of cholov to begin with. All I had is a tipas cholov. So in the worst case scenario, according to Rav, this Mishnah could only be talking about a derabban.
Okay, thank you.
Now the Chachmas Adam, as you know, the Baal HaChai Adam, the Mishnah tomorrow night, will, for those who have the minig, will be reading his Tefillah Zaka, but he wrote a tremendous work on Yoredeya, on the laws of mixtures of milk and meat. And he says the following, that if this Tipas Cholov fell into a pot of meat that was cold. Again, we haven't even discussed yet, and the Mishnah doesn't even mention the very important condition here, Lechora, as we'll soon see in the Chachmas Adam, to qualify that this Kedera that's holding on to this Basar is cooking. It's really boiling hot. So the Chachmas Adam points out that if the Kedera is not boiling hot, it's called Sonenes. Sonenes means, literally, you translate it as cold, but it doesn't really mean cold because we're talking about anything that's not hot. You know, you and I might call it warm or something, but it's called sonenes. So in such a case, he says, there would be no pipua, there would be no spreading of the tam of cholov. And it could be in that case, again, we have to go into the laws of tzonen, it could be you're allowed to eat the piece of meat even though you can't find the cholov, you know, you have no way of extracting the cholov and removing it from the meat, but nevertheless, there's nothing asur over here because the cholov doesn't give tam into the basar because it's a kederet sonenes. You have to remember that word sonenes. Sure. But he says, if you cooked meat in a pot and then you remove the pot from the fire, then he says, if the cholov falls into that pot, as long as the pot is still hot, even though it's not over the fire, then you create basa b'cholov. And this, my friends, hopefully reminds you of something we did when we started this chapter, this parak. And that was the Isur Halah. We said that, why is it that I'm not allowed to put meat and milk on the same table, eating both at the same time? So Gemara comes to the conclusion that we're afraid Shemayala the Ilfas Bekli Rishon. So it means he may take the meat off the fire, put it on his table. Maybe it's on a trivet, but it's on the table and it's still boiling hot. Says the Chachmas Adam, in that case, our Mishnah would apply. So again, we have three scenarios. We have one scenario which is the extreme Le'iser, and that's where the pot is on the fire. And then the tipas cholov falls into the pot. We have another case, which is the extreme leheter, and that's called the kedera sonenes. In the middle, between the two, we have what's called kli rishon, which means it was taken off the fire, but it's still roseth, it's still boiling hot. And in such a case, as the Chachmas Adam, it has the same exact status as if the fire was underneath it. And he builds his case on Yoredeya Siman Kufhei. Now Yoredeya Siman Kufhei is like a catchphrase, you know. It's like Tehillim 119, you know, there's Kufhei 105, you know, if you want to know the laws of Tarovas and you're studying for Smicha, so the most important Siman that you have to know is Kufhei. And according to the Chachmas Adam, if you read Kufhei carefully, you will see that if the kedera is still rosachas, even though it's not on top of the fire, it's basa b'cholov. And when we're talking about basa b'cholov, we're talking about da'oraisa. Now what happens in the following case? Here's where the Chachmas Adam goes to town. You take the pot off the fire and you pour its contents into another pot. That's called what?
Irui.
The second pot is? No, now it's in the second pot. Not Irui.
Klisheni.
Now, kli sheni, on the one end, is not the same as a kli rishon. Now, this pot was never on the fire, but on the other hand, for a few seconds, it's still called roseach. It could be boiling hot. It hasn't yet cooled off. It's in the process of cooling off. It's called Roseach. And he adds it's Yad Soledes. Yad Soledes means if you would put your finger in it, you would burn your finger. So that's how hot it is. And he says that this is going to be a tremendous issue in the poskim. Again, you have to go back to Simon Kufhei. Would our Mishnah apply of Tipas Cholov in a case of a klisheni, which is Yad Soledes Bo? If it's not Yad Soledes Bo, there's nothing to talk about, because then even in a Kli Rishon, it's not Mavasha. But if it's Yad Soledes Bo, you and I would say, well, it has the same heat as the Kli Rishon. It certainly should be Mavliya. Mavliya means it should cause this Pipua that we spoke about, in which case the Cholov penetrates throughout the Basar, through the piece of meat. However, since it's a klisheni, there are those poskim who maintain that klisheni ain't a mevashel. There's no such thing as bishul in a klisheni. We had a long discussion about this when we learned Masechta Shabbos as far as melechas bishul is concerned. Period. This is an absolute rule. You can never have bishul in a klisheni. And if you can't have bishul in a klisheni, then the blia is not recognized by the Torah as a blia of basam cholov. I mean, you and I would say, well, if I gave you this mixture and the tipas cholov fell into the second pot, right, and it was boiling hot, now I gave you this mixture to taste, you would know no difference. You could not taste the difference between the klisheni and the kli rishon. But we have a halachic principle that klisheni ain't a mevashel. So there's a whole school of poskim that say that to the same extent that klisheni ain't a mevashel, it's not mavliya also. What do you mean it's not mavliya? There is a taste over here, but that's not recognized by the Torah. Why? Because the Torah says Lo Savashal Gidi Bachalev Bachalevim. Next question. Is the pot covered or is it uncovered? So this is going to be a Gemara. I'm just mentioning it as an introduction on Kuf Ches Omid Beis. The Gemara is going to assume that our Mishnah is talking about a pot that is uncovered.
How can it be covered?
Junk pot.
Falls on the meat.
No, the Gemara is going to have a possibility where it falls on the kisui, on the cover. And the Gemara is going to say, in such a case, what we're going to do is, we're going to prohibit everything that's in that pot. Again, our discussion here is going to be about an uncovered pot, and therefore there's one piece of meat that's the victim, you know, that's received this tipas cholov. And we're going to decide what the ratio is, or the impact of that cholov on that particular piece of meat. However, if the drop of milk falls on the kisui of the kedero, then it's as if it fell throughout the entire kedero. You can't isolate one particular piece of meat. Now, this is good news and bad news. It's both lekula and lechumra. Does anybody see why it could be lakula? If I say when it falls on the mikseh, on the cover, I can integrate the entire context of the pot. What? Exactly, because it's so much easier to get shishim, to get bittul against the tipas cholov if you calculate the entire contents of the pot. On the other hand, the bad news is that, let's say you have five pieces of meat, you know, cooking in the pot, the milk falls on the kisui. In such a case, if the five pieces of meat are not enough to be mevatel the tipas cholov, then all the five pieces of meat become aser. Whereas in our case, that it fell on a megula, on a pot that's open, and it falls on one particular piece of meat, then we're gonna try to calculate is there shishim in that piece of meat? If there's no shishim in that piece of meat, then the piece of meat is aser, right? If you don't have shishim against the cholov. But as far as the rest, the balance of the kedera, that didn't receive the piece of meat. In other words, the pipua is limited to that piece of meat, and it doesn't apply to the rest of the contents of the kedera. But that's only, the Gemara establishes, if it fell inside an open pot, meaning directly onto a piece of meat. If it falls on a cover, on the cover lid, then what we're going to do is we're going to assume that the tipas mispashetes becholak deir b'shav. It spreads itself out and the pipua is equidistant, which again is good news if we get shishim in the pot. It's bad news if we can't get shishim, because then everything in the pot is going to be awesome. So when your drop of milk falls on the cover lid, you got to be very concerned about it.
does it matter what material the cover is? Like, you know, a crockpot has a glass cover.
When we get to the sugya, we'll try to figure that out. For that, we need the Moresh's Moshe, who summarizes all the poskim. Okay, now we get to the main question for today. What is the story with this piece of meat? I call it the victim, if you know what I mean. Whenever I use the word victim, you'll understand that's a short way of saying that's the piece of meat where the challah fell on. So here we have a gigantic machlokas. Now, in the Masifta, this machlokas is the machlokas in Rashi and Tosfos. In the Moresh's Moshe, it's a five-way machlokas. So we're going to go with the Tosefta first. It's only a two-way machlokas, but you'll see there's so many variations that it really comes out to be a five-way machlokas. Now, the interesting thing here is all the Rishonim attack Rashi. There's like the famous Shitas Rashi in our Mishnah, and nobody knows where this Rashi is. So it's really interesting, the development. There are going to be many, many different Achronim who try to analyze where is this Rashi that everybody's attacking. All the Rishonim are attacking this Rashi. Rashi says that the victim meat is either floating on the top of the rest of the contents of the pot, or it's halfway submerged in what's called the rotev. The rotev is the liquid or gravy that's in the pot. And Tosis can't tolerate this Rashi. I'll tell you why in a second. But it's not just Tosis. It's like almost who's who in the Rishonim list. They all stand up and object to this Rashi. So again, according to Rashi, our Mishnah is talking about a case. Again, we don't know where this Rashi is, but Rashi is talking about a case where the chaticha is miktsasa chutz l'rotev u'miktsasa b'tocha rotev. So you imagine a piece of meat, half of which is above the skyline, you know, the top line of the rotev, and half of it is submerged in the rotev. Tosfos can't accept this. Why? Because the very principle that underlies our Mishnah is that the tipas cholah is mefafea in that one single chaticha, and it's not mispashet, as it doesn't spread throughout the entire kedera. That would only make sense, as Tosfos, is if that chaticha is standing or sitting on the shoulders of another chaticha, which is maybe up to the level of the rotev, but the chaticha that received this tipas cholov is completely above the rotev. And Tosfos insists that if that chaticha is inside the rotev, meaning part of it, let's say the bottom part of the chaticha is submerged in the rotev, then, says Tosfos, the tipas cholov, like we said in the case where it fell on the mikseh, is mishpashetes throughout the entire kedera. Which again is both good news and bad news. It's good news if you have shishim against the tipa, but it's bad news if you don't have shishim against the tipa. And again, Rav Moshe, when I say shishim, don't take me literally, because you can give it to a kfeila, as we'll soon see. You don't necessarily have to, you know, it's very complicated to be Mashiach shishim. You have to do a displacement theory, you know, you have to put an egg in water and see how much water is displaced. But the simple way is to just give it to a guy and let him taste it, and he'll tell you whether it tastes milky or not. But what are you giving to the guy? You know, if I give him any piece of meat from the entire pot, you know, chances are he won't feel the taste of a tipas cholov that fell into the pot. And Tosfos says that if this top chaticha was partially submerged in rotev, the way Rashi learns it, then the tipas cholov is not going to remain within the bounds, you know, the boundaries of that chaticha, but the rotev on the bottom, which is hot rotev, will now receive that tipa. So the tipa is going through the meat into the rotev now spreads that tipa throughout the entire kedera, and immediately, as soon as the tipa falls, if again that chatichas basar is miktas berotev, then the tipa goes into the entire kedera. It does not remain in any way. You and I might say, well, maybe it's concentrated, you know, it's focused on the top piece of meat. No, it's equal, it's uniform, it's spread throughout the entire kedera. Again, that's good news if you have shishim, it's bad news if you don't have shishim. Rashi, on the other hand, says that since the tipa fell on that part of the chaticha, which is above the rotev, that's enough to create a a boxed-in situation where the tipa is only mefafeah throughout that one chaticha, the entire chaticha, even the part that's below the rotev, but it will not penetrate below the chaticha and enter into the kedera. And again, what Rashi means, therefore, is we're only going to be meshayar shishim keneged, you know, the keneged the chol in this one chaticha, despite the fact that the chaticha is halfway submerged in the rotev. So we're going to come back to this over and over again.
Let's just know that it doesn't go from chaticha to chaticha. It's not mufafeh to chaticha.
In what case? It's above the rotev or it's below the rotev?
It doesn't matter. He's saying that there's ein mufafeh to chaticha to chaverta. How does he know that concept occurs? Why wouldn't it go from one chaticha to another chaticha?
Well, again, that's the underlying premise of our Mishnah. The Mishnah seems to assume, right, that unless you mix the chaticha together with the rest of the kedera, that's going to be the second half of the Mishnah. We didn't get to that yet. That's called near a sakedera. But in the absence of near, then the tipas cholov is only in that one single chaticha. The question is going to be, where is this chaticha? That's how Machlokas
Rashi.
Well, no, Tosus says that who told Rashi that the chaticha is partially submerged in the rotev? Tosus thinks that the only reason, the raison d'etre here, why the chaticha is the box, you know, boxes off the tipas cholov is because it's outside of the rotev. If the chaticha is inside the rotev, then the chaticha is going to be a conduit, so to speak, to take this tipas cholov and spread it throughout the entire chaticha. That's Tosfos the sheep.
So
again,
where
the rayas are and so forth. Well, I'm just mentioning this at the beginning, you know, as an introduction to our mission.
Where there's no transmission of time from chaticha to chaticha, that has to be when the first one is completely outside of the rotev.
According to Tosfos, it's got to be completely outside of the rotev. The Chiddush of Rashi here, again, we don't know where this Rashi is, and again, there's so much literature on trying to find this Rashi. Even though the chaticha is partially submerged in the rotev, it doesn't transmit the tam and the cholov throughout the kedera. It remains trapped within that chaticha because it fell on that part of the chaticha above the rotev. Now, as I mentioned to you before, this seems to be a two-way machlokes between Rashi and Tosfos. However, there are a whole bunch of other shitos. Okay, so let me mention to you a third shita here. The third shita is reflected in the works of some more obscure Rishonim, meaning not so popular Rishonim. For example, the Ozarua, Nago Soshri, the Smag. Anyway, they claim the following, that if it's Miktsasa B'tocha Rotev and Miktsasa L'chutzla Rotev, then it depends on the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, right? So Rashi would say that it's trapped in the chaticha, but they claim, listen to this, that it's possible, mind you, this is wild, that even if the chaticha is completely submerged in the rotev, nevertheless the mission applies and the pipua is only within that chatich. How could that be? So the Beis Yosef makes the following comment. He says, the Iri bipaneha ha'elyonos megulos. So again, the chatich in this case is completely submerged in rotev, but the top layer of the chaticha is Megula. You can see the top layer of the chaticha. It's not submerged inside the rotev.
So completely means like 95%.
Right. Okay. It's the entire chaticha in terms of its volume, but the actual flat surface level of the top chaticha, which has received the tipas cholov, is going to receive that tipas cholov. Again, the language of the Beis Yosef is paneha ha'elyonos Megulos. Right, the top face of that chaticha is exposed. You know, so you see it when you look at it, and therefore you can say that the tipas kol fell on this chaticha,
and only on this chaticha, meaning and the pipua is limited to this chaticha. And the Beis Yosef points out the imlokein, if you don't agree with me, and if you're going to tell me that according to this shita, the smag, the yarzaru, etc., it's completely submerged, even the panel alyonos, is lo shayach shatipa tipol dafgal chaticha zu. There's no way that you can assume that this tipa fell dafn on this chaticha. You don't even see the chaticha is submerged. Then we have another shita, going even further. This is the Aruch HaShulchan shita. For those who are big Aruch HaShulchan fans, like me. So he wants to claim that the way he reads the Rambam is that the chaticha is legamri b'toch harotev. It's completely submerged in the rotev. V'ein paneh magulos. V'afilu b'chai gavna, haderechi, shekishen nosein shuman b'toch harotev, hu omeid b'mokom echad, now I'm not sure which is the shuman here, if it's the milk or the meat, but one of the two ingredients is shuman. It's a very thick, fatty substance, and it hovers for a certain period of time before it spreads out. Now, if you have a liquid, a pure liquid, a watery liquid, it will spread out immediately, but not in the case of a davar shamein, and a davar shamein will remain in its place, I don't know, he doesn't tell you how long, let's say for 10 seconds, and during that 10 second period of time, it will be absorbed by that top piece of meat, even though again, that top of meat has not even shown its face above the level of the rotev. So, I'm just mentioning that, you know, the broad scope of all the different possibilities.
In that case, the drop moves slower through the rotev than it does through the piece of meat. It's saying the piece of meat absorbs completely this drop quicker
right.
than it moves.
Maybe he means because the meat is a davar shamein, so somehow the milk gets trapped by the meat. Now, how do we paskin? This is also a gigantic machlokes. The Beis Yosef says we paskin like Rashi. And not only that, the Taz also paskins like Rashi. Now again, is that good news or bad news? I would say, as a general rule, it's bad news. What do I mean by bad news? Because now you are trapping the chalav in that one piece of basar, even though it's submerged in the rotev. Tosis, on the other hand, would be much more lenient in this case, because he would say that since the bottom of the chatich is submerged in rotev, then the tipa is going to spread out throughout the entire kedera. And the Shach claims, together with the Marshal, okay, the Marshal is a little bit before the Shach, but both were more or less in the same century, that everybody paskins like Tosis against Rashi. Meaning, Tosis Ishita is that we're talking in our Mishnah, why is the Tipa on that Chaticha and only on the Chaticha? Because the Chaticha is above the Rotev. It's sitting on another piece of meat that's submerged in the Rotev, but it's, you know, piggybacking on top of that meat. And the question is, for Ashkenazic Jews, how do we paskin? The Ramah is very, very unclear. The Shach claims that the Ramah wants to be machmir in both directions. He wants to accept Rashi l'chumra, which means that if there's not shishim in the entire, I'm sorry, Rashi l'chumra, which would mean that I need shishim in the piece of meat, even though it's submerged partially in the rotev. That's a chumra of Rashi. But then he's going to accept Tosis l'shik l'chumra, that if it's submerged partially in the rotev, we can asa the entire kedera if there's no shishim in the kedera against that tipas chol.
How does this work, practically speaking? Let's go with Rashi. So you would, if you took out that piece of meat then, even though it's half submerged, if you take out that piece of meat, is there a certain amount of time you have?
But I don't know exactly how much time you have. That's an excellent question. But if you rip out that piece of meat immediately before it gets a chance to infect the rest of the kedera, and let's assume that in the worst case scenario you don't have shishim in that piece of meat, you have to throw out the meat, but the rest of the kedera you're allowed to eat. Now, one last point here before we go on, because I want to get to the Sefer of the Mishnah that's near Esa Kedera, where he mixes the Kedera. Nafla Tipa B'tocha Rotev. What happens in the case, which is not our Mishnah, where a Tipas Chol falls into the Rotev? It falls directly into the, you know, the contents of the pot. There's plenty of gravy, plenty of liquids in the pot. V'ein Bamesha B'tocha Rotev Shir Shishim. rak b'tziruf chelek shel abasar shu michutz l'rotev. We're now reversing our entire question. What happens if the tipas chalav went into the rotev directly? And now I need shishim in the entire contents of the pot keneged the tipa. What about that chaticha, which is above the rotev? Would this depend upon the machlokas Rashi and Tosfos? Meaning, according to Rashi, that chaticha is... Well, wait a minute. Even according to... Let's start with Tosfos here, because Tosfos says that the chaticha that's above the rotev, right, is completely separate. Right,
it's 100% above.
100% above the rotev, and it's totally disconnected, independent of the. So if you see that chatichas basa that's above the rotev as something independent because it's totally above the rotev, then he says that in such a case you cannot calculate that chatichas basa into the shishim when the challah fell directly into the rotev. So who says this? This is going to be okay. I just want to get the name straight here. Let's say I'll read out loud. There are three sheets: the Prima Gadim, the Bach, and the Chavastas. Chavastas is the Nesivus. If anybody knows who that is, okay. So let's go through. The Prima Gadim says the following: that if the Chaticha is completely above the Rotev, it's not mixtarif l'shishim l'kuli alma. Everybody would agree it's not part of the shishim. If it's half in the rotev and half above the rotev, then everybody agrees that the half that's in the rotev could be mixtarif for bittul shishim. The machlokas is now going to be, what about the top half of this chaticha? L'rashi eino mixtarif, ulitosis mixtarif. Rashi is going to say that top half of the chaticha elyona, right, the highest chaticha, which is the top half, is outside the rotev, above the rotev level, that could not be calculated within the shishim. But according to Tosfos, since the basar, the chaticha's basar is half in the rotev, that means that it's connected to the kedera. You follow what I mean by connected to the kedera, right? According to Tosfos. And therefore, I can use even that part of the meat that's above the rotev level to be mishayar b'shishim. And the Bach says, against the Prima Gadim, no. Even the Bala Tosfos, would agree to Rashi in this case that einim mitztarif. Why? Dafka milamala lamata yored. Aval eina ola milamata lamala. Yeah, this reminds me of that song, you know, Mila, Mila, Mila. Who's the one who sings that? You know, Mil, Dorom, what's his name? He says the following, that the Re-Balatosis is of the opinion that the top half of this chaticha, even though it's above the rotev, is for all intents and purposes in the rotev. That's only Mila, Mila, Lamata, meaning if the tipas chola falls on the top half of the chaticha, since the bottom half of the chaticha is in the rotev, therefore Tosfos holds it will travel, so to speak, from the top half of the basar all the way through the bottom into the kedera itself. But the opposite is not true. When you want to know if the tipas chol that fell into the rotev into the kedera itself, would it travel all the way up to the top half of the rotev? I'm sorry, the top half of the chaticha, which is above the rotev level. There, says the Bach, even Tosfos would say that in that direction it doesn't go. So again, as I always say, we, you know, Tipas Cholov is a live being, you know, so, you know, it has certain dimensions. It goes up, it goes down, no, it'll go down, but it won't go up. I mean, very... Okay, that's as far as the Bach is concerned. The Chavos Das says that even Rashi would hold that in this case, you could be mitzarev, you could add the top half of the chaticha to the shishim. Why da rotev mefafea b'chol ha-chaticha? He says once the rotev transmits this tam of cholov into the bottom half of the chaticha, then the rotev has the power to push it up all the way to the top half of the chatikah. In other words, we don't split the chatikah into two parts. So again, Belinetta will go over this again, but we have every single possible shita that you can imagine. Let's just finish the Mishnah in the few minutes we have. The Mishnah says the following. Nier es hakedera. So we're going to see Rashi and the Mefarshim, they all say that this means miyad. Again, I know, Eric, you can ask me, what is miyad? I don't know. And we don't know exactly what miyad is. But it means in a very short period of time. So this guy was very clever. Why was he clever? Because he calculated immediately, you know, in a dangerous situation. This is a first responder. You know, he realized that, hey, if I don't do anything active now, then my chaticha is going to be asura. Why? Because I don't have shishim in that top chaticha against the tipas chola. So what does he do? Near es hakedera, otherwise known as megas es hakedera, so he mixes the kedera. The basar is now completely submerged inside the pot with all its contents. Immediately after the tipas chola fell on that pot, on that top piece of meat, then, again, I don't know if this is good news or bad news, but in Yeshba, B'no Sengtav, if that Tipas Cholov has enough of a, you know, of a presence that it would give Tam into the entire Kedera, B'cholos Kedera Asur, that's the bad news. And the good news would be, now we could be Meshire in the entire Kedera against the Tipa. One of the most important questions that are raised here on this mission is, what about Ein Mevat L'Nisa L'Chatchila? You know, the Mishnah seems to assume near Es HaKedera, as if to say that he's allowed to do it, or are we only talking about a B'dievet situation? You know, this is what he did. You know, he immediately responded. Can he do this L'Chatchila? Many Mefarshim are going to say that this is not a problem of Ein Mevat L'Nisa L'Chatchila, either because of the unique nature of Basar B'Cholov, which we have to discuss, or because the tipa hasn't yet settled. It's still in it's still in transition.
Oh, so you're preventing an isur, not
correct. You're preventing an isur from being chal. You know, bittul isur is when you take a chefetz of the isura and you mevatel it. But here, what you're doing is you're taking this tipa skull before it asks anything, and you're spreading it throughout the entire kedir. So it could be that the Mishnah would accept that you're allowed to do this. Okay, so I'll just spend 2 minutes reading to you a summary of Shita Satosus here in the Masifti. He says, Das Satosus, Shemedubar, the case in that mission is Dafka Bechaticha Omeres Kula Chutz L'Rotev Al Gabi HaChaticha Acheres Shehi Chetzi V'Rotev. So our Chaticha, the victim Chaticha, is completely above the rotev. V'dafka bazeh shayach ladun. Now we could say teyoser achaticha levada. The chaticha becomes a separate element, an entity unto itself, and it depends on whether the chaticha has shishim against the tipas cholov or not. Avo kishenofla tipas cholov al chaticha shechetzia berotev. V'chetzia chutz lerotev is mispashe tam hachaticha derech chetzia chaticha sheberotev. El kol akedera v'dina kinir. It has the same status as if he was menayer es akedera. Again, he wasn't menayer es akedera in this particular scenario, but it's as if he was menayer es akedera because the tipas chol would be mispashing through the entire kedera by virtue of the fact that chaticha itself that received the tipa is half below the rotor. So he doesn't have to do an active near in order to be mitzarif the entire chaticha, again, the entire kedera, which again, as I say, could go either positive or negative. And he says, Tamo shel dover, why is this so? Kevon shetama tipa mispashit b'chol ha-chaticha shaleh nofla. Right, we said that the pipua, the spreading of the tipa, is throughout the entire chaticha. Therefore, kol shechetzi achaticha nimtzu b'toch harotev, if half of the chaticha is submerged in the rotev, is overes hatipa derech harotev el kol hakedera. So the rotev now, through the bottom half of this chaticha, becomes the conduit to transmit the tam of the cholov throughout the entire kedera. The Afsheva Rishona, even though chronologically the first thing that happens is it's mispashetes b'tocha chaticha, you know, if you could split it with a fine, you know, with a second, you know, one split second, at stage one, the tipas cholov is in that chaticha itself. But kol shederch is pashtusa hi, ein netzeres sham, it will not remain trapped within that chaticha if the bottom of the chaticha is submerged in the rotev. Now he quotes just one last line here, the Issa v'Heter, one of the poskim from 5-6 centuries ago, and he says that this tosis, to some extent, reflects a shita in the Gemara that we're going to get to, we haven't gotten to it yet, called Efsho L'Sochto Osur. Hamavur Behemshech HaAmud, and Efsho L'Sochto Osur is going to mean that once the chaticha becomes asura, it remains asura, and you cannot reverse that situation. Again, that's a major sugya of Efshel Sokto, Bulineta will get to it. So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a Gemar Chesima Tova. I don't have to tell you that, you know, tomorrow is Erev Yom Kippur. It's a very special day. We should be in the midst of Asiri, you know, it says kol ochel v'shosev v'chi malav v'kosesh kilu hisana, both Asiri and chi and Asiri. And Bli Neder, we'll get together on Thursday if that's okay with the Olam. If you can't make it, let me know, and we'll end the zman, so to speak, on Thursday, and then we'll pick it up after.
Because everyone's here today, everyone knows, right? There's no one who's not here. Is that correct? Okay.
Where is Jerry these days? I haven't seen him in ages.
He's
had in chutzot. Is he still?
I haven't seen him since.
And Dominic, you haven't seen him. You usually die. He dies in your minute.
I haven't seen him.
So apparently he's not here.